Okay, thanks, Simon. Okay, so we're moving on to cryptos, crypto assets and liabilities. I'm handing over to Vincent from eFrac.
Thanks, everybody. I'm cognizant that most of you may have attended the IFAS session where we presented the paper. So we aim to keep our presentation today quite short. So we restrict ourselves to about 15 minutes and get your thoughts thereafter. So let me just share the slides. Can you see the slides?
Yes.
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 Okay. So the discussion paper encompasses a problem definition. So in the problem definition, we are looking at accounting issues as well as the contextual factors such as the economic characteristics, regulatory requirements, and the rights and obligations that one associates with crypto assets. We also do cover a way forward for addressing the IFRS-related requirements. A key objective of the discussion paper is to get feedback, which we then can feed into the next year's IFRS agenda consultation process. I would say that the scope of the discussion paper goes beyond last year's IFRIC agenda decision, which focused on cryptocurrencies where there's no claim on the issuer. And those are very much the first generation of crypto assets. So our focus is broader, where we look at a variety of use cases that are also associated with the crypto assets. So just going a couple of slides forward, I'll go into the way forward. So what I'll emphasize on this slide is that regardless of the pace of technological innovation and enhancements that are occurring with regards to product features, it's important to think about what is in the container rather than the container itself. So often there's a question as to whether things are moving too fast, such as it wouldn't make sense to address accounting requirements, but there needs to be a focus on the economic substance underlying the crypto assets. Then we do present three options within the discussion paper. And this slide just summarizes the options. So one of the options is to do nothing at this point in time. Effectively, preparers can apply IS-8, and this option would be viewed to be appropriate with the view that crypto assets are not prevalent at this point in time. The other two options, the do something options, there's a view that it makes sense to address the shortfalls that stakeholders are pointing out, as opposed to waiting to a point whereby an issue does precipitate. So there's an aspect of future-proofing the IFRS requirements. Within the discussion paper, we do give a detailed analysis of the pros and cons of the three options identified. And we also ask stakeholders if they think there are any other options which we may not have considered. In terms of looking forward, the DP also outlines factors which could impact the cryptos becoming mainstream. So we've got a chapter which is really analyzing the potential implications for market development. And thereby, we do look at aspects that would need to be in place for crypto assets to be mainstream. But we avoid any form of crystal ball gazing. So that was outside the scope of IFRAG's work. Can't see my slides. Okay. Can you see my slides?
Yes, number 10.
Well, it's frozen, but let me just carry on because I think there's a problem with the slides.
If you tell us what slide you're on, then we probably have questions in front of us.
Okay.
So what slide are you going to talk about now?
Because I certainly have the holders chapter. So if you go to slide 11, the holders.
Okay.
Bon, ben, je vais essayer. Je, pour l'instant, je n'entends rien.
Moi, je continue à entendre des choses.
La
connexion est difficile à lui, mais
je
continue à entendre des choses.
Bah, je vois les slides, mais j'entends rien.
Ah, ça, c'est pas normal. Parce que moi, j'entends sous l'œil de là et Vincent va pas discuter. Mais visiblement, les participants n'ont pas l'air de.
Patrick, could you please mute?
On vous entend, Patrick, là, sur webcam.
Ah, pardon.
So I'm on slide 11 for the holders. So the focus of the holders chapter is really around the amendments and the areas where clarification may be needed. I would emphasize that what we address within the discussion paper is not exhaustive. So going to slide 13. So in slide 13, we do highlight areas for the possible update of IFRS requirement and a cross-party issue that we point out is the need for development of guidance for non-financial assets that are held as investments. We also do raise issues that do arise with the measurement under IAS 38 and IAS 2, whereby we note that not in all circumstances, you do not get relevant accounting for crypto assets. So a point that's made is that IAS 38 was issued in 1998 and it was not written with intangible assets with crypto with characteristics of crypto assets in mind. Some shortcomings on the applicability of IAS 38 are also noted within the discussion paper. So for example, around the restrictions that the revaluation approach imposes towards fair value measurement in the absence of active markets. Going to the next slide, which is slide 14. So here we do note that there's need to ensure that the financial asset or similar classification is applied where appropriate. And this really arises where the contractual features of smart contracts may not fit within the IAS 32 definition of enforceable contracts. Hence, some tokens may have functional equivalents to securities, such as having rights to entities' cash flows, but they may not qualify as financial assets. One of the points also that was raised when we did the presentation in September was whether some cues could be taken from the regulatory classification of financial instruments. But within the discussion paper, we had some analysis of that possibility, and we do note that there are varied definitions at a national level, and also there are differences. For example, when you look at the classification under the EU MiFID versus the US SEC requirements, the different criteria that are applied. And at an EU level, there's a question of transposition to national specific requirements. And that would pose a challenge as far as carrying over the regulatory classification and applying it for accounting purposes. Another aspect we do point out is a possible need for an updated definition of cash and cash equivalents. And this in particular relates to the central bank digital currencies and cases where you have stable coins which are pegged to fiat currency. Then there are also points for clarification that we do highlight within the discussion paper. So in slide 15, we note that there's need for clarification around the accounting treatment for utility and hybrid tokens. And the last point I'd mention is around the accounting by holders on behalf of others. So we do note that there is a variety of approaches in making the determination of which party in terms of the depositor client versus the intermediary. So when you're trying to ascertain who has got economic control and thereby needs to recognize the crypto assets in the statement of financial position. So there's diversity in practice that does arise due to the range of considerations that may be in play across jurisdictions. So that's a point whereby clarification could be needed. My final point would be that the points that we've addressed in the discussion paper are not exhaustive. So some issues we've touched on rather lightly. So for example, around barter exchanges, as well as the mining activities, so essentially the minting of crypto assets that does occur and the holders that would have holdings on the basis of their mining activities. There are also other issues that have been addressed by other publications and guidance. So, for example, the question of impairment, the very specific questions that do arise, like what would be the unit of account? And a final point I would mention also that we've not addressed is when cryptos are held by investment entities. So we've seen some guidance, other publications that have addressed this particular aspect, but our discussion paper has not touched on that. So I'll stop with that on the holders, and I'll ask my colleague Isabel to talk us through the issuers and valuation issues.
Thank you, Vincent. I don't have the slides, so can you not get the slides to work, Vincent? No?
No.
I'll try.
Vincent, why don't you just take the slides down and then we can look at your faces and we can use our own copy.
My slide number is wrong. I do apologize because okay. I've got an old presentation. I didn't print this one and I want to be on camera so it's easier. I think I'll start on slide 18. That slide should say issuers, ICOs overview, if I've got the number right. Okay, great. So I will cover a chapter that deals with the issuance of crypto assets and the implications of accounting requirements on the issuance of crypto assets. And then I will cover briefly some aspects around valuation of crypto assets. So on slide 18, it talks about what is an ICO. Well, essentially, an initial coin offering is the start of the process where tokens are issued in order to raise funds of a new project on crypto assets or an existing project. And tokens or digital assets, crypto assets, are then issued to potential investors. And as we all know, IFRS does not cover ICO accounting because ICOs are quite new. As Vincent said, they only started a few years ago. And so IFRS has not yet got there other than the IFRIC agenda that Vincent mentioned, which does not cover issuance in itself as it deals mainly with cryptocurrencies, which don't have a claim on the issuer. It's important to know that ICOs have unique features and terms and conditions, and these ought to be covered and set out in what is referred to as a white paper. But due to still lack of regulation in many jurisdictions around the world, these white papers may not be consistent, the information may not be credible. So it is kind of quite challenging to work out what are the features of the crypto asset when they are actually issued. There are a number of types of crypto assets, stable coins. Some are referred to as utility tokens, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And also we have what we refer to as security tokens, which are kind of in a way similar to stocks because they have they give the holder a right to a part of the company, of the issuing company. So moving on to the next slide, 19. For accounting, you know, one of the important aspects is what are the obligations that the issuer undertakes when it engages in an ICO. So looking at the definition of a liability under the conceptual framework, we try to link that to the obligations an issuer can undertake. When we look at, for example, utility tokens, typically there the issuer will undertake a form to the holder. So there could be an obligation to do something there. We could also have things like constructive obligations, which could arise. Now, if we cannot identify an obligation, then we cannot buy credit. We think, well, that's probably going to be profit and loss. Looking at the next slide, what are the applicable IFRS standards? Well, when IFRS reporting companies are reporting or do engage in the issuance of crypto assets, it's important to provide information to users. So we all know that if we don't have a standard, we would look at the guidance in ISAIDS and see how we could develop, how a company can develop an accounting policy. So looking at current IFRSs that deal with similar or related issues, or looking also at the relevant concepts outlined in the conceptual framework, or also at looking at other guidance of similar frameworks to that of the ISB, to see whether how we can develop an accounting policy. Moving on to the next slide, we looked at, in our research, we looked at various accounting firm and national standard setter guidance. So I'm in on slide 21. And we identified really four main IFRSs that could potentially give us some guidance on how to account for crypto asset issuance. So one of the first things we'd ask, is there a financial liability that meets the definition of one under IFRS that could be accounted for under IFRS 9? And the absence of that, we could ask, is there sort of an equity instrument for the entity? Like I said, there are some tokens that have similar features to stocks. So they could give the holder some right in the issuing company. So there could be some analogy to an equity instrument, which could be accounted for under the guidance in IS 32. For utility tokens, IFRS 15 comes to mind, because what we found in our research is that they do often offer the holder some sort of a service, like access to a platform, or a good, so as over the blockchain, over the tokens platform. So there could be an obligation under IFRS 15. And absent the above, we would ask, is there some sort of a constructor obligation that could be accounted for under IS 37? So moving on to the next slide, what we did find is notable variation in the across EU jurisdictions, based on the guidance we found in the accounting firms and national standard setter guidance. Some EU countries have already started and have developed local accounting requirements under local GAAP for ICOs. And at the time, we saw that France had already developed some guidance, and also Lithuania, and probably as I speak, there could, and also outside of Europe, that have engaged in developing guidance. Also outside of Europe, we found that Japan had already engaged in starting the development of ICO guidance. So moving on to the next slide, there are a number of other matters, slide 23, a number of other matters that also need to be considered. So if we think of ICOs, we have special things like what we refer to as pre-sale agreements, so the SAF. So sometimes an issuer issues a token that has not yet been developed. So they're trying to sort of, you know, gather funds in order to develop the project. Very much sort of a startup crowdfunding type of feature. And sometimes they promise investors the money back, so the funds back, if the project doesn't work. So how to account for that? Is that a prepayment? Is that something else? Also, own ICO token. So typically what we found is with the issuance of ICOs, companies that do engage in this will actually keep some of the tokens within the company, so they don't get publicly issued. And the question is, how to account for those? They could also be used for employee services. It could also be used to buy goods or services. So would we apply current IFRSs for employee services like IS 19, IFRS 2? So questions around that. And in the following slide, the final slide on this chapter, slide 24, we list a number of other aspects that need further investigation. So how to account for issue costs with ICOs. Issue costs are similar to what I could say IPO costs. So the issuer engages in developing a platform, in various costs in order to issue the tokens, how to account for those. I've already talked about own ICO tokens, and also things like airdrops. Airdrops are quite popular in this crypto world. They're typically tricky or free to motivate people to engage in the crypto or use this promotional aspect to reward, to promote. So how do you account for those? So is there, are they expenses or what are they? And I'm going to move on quickly to the next chapter on valuation, and I'll jump to slide 26, I think it is, which is titled Valuation Methodologies. So valuation is obviously a rather challenging aspect for crypto assets and crypto liabilities, because not only is this, this ecosystem in a very early stage of development, but they are extremely volatile. So as most of you will know, the price variation of cryptos has a very high volatility rate. Perhaps for some of the early earlier cryptos like Bitcoin, some stability has come into play in the last year or two, but otherwise it's still very, very volatile. Methodology for valuation is a challenging aspect. We looked at a few research research reports on valuation, and the three elements I list on slide 26 are some of the things we found to be quite interesting to develop a methodology. So firstly, what is the current value of the crypto assets to make payments? So if we think of Bitcoin, we know that in some jurisdictions, Bitcoin is accepted as a means of payment. Others probably not. There are thousands of other crypto assets that maybe at this stage are not yet an acceptable means of payment. The other aspect is the decision of investors to actually engage in buying crypto assets. So we're thinking of institutional investors. What is their appetite to engage in this market? I've recently been reading that there are some large institutional investors, particularly in the US, that have been buying significant amounts of Bitcoin and Ethereum. So there is some appetite being created from what I've understood and what our research also found. And finally, what are the elements that jointly will create sort of adoption, sort of more global adoption of crypto assets and acceptance by the market? So these are the elements that could drive the development of a methodology. On the next slide, we refer to a research paper that was developed by CBV Institute, which is the Professional Association of Chartered Business Valuers in Canada. They talked about three elements around valuation that are listed on the second bullet. Cost of production, equation of exchange, and network value of transactions ratio. Now, these might sound a little bit foreign, but the next slide gives a little bit more context. So turning to slide 28. How to link these three elements in this paper to what we know today under IFRS. So the cost of production pretty much looks at the cost of actually producing this crypto asset. So if we think of Bitcoin and many others, it would be the mining costs and any other elements that go into getting this thing, you know, ready on the blockchain. So that's very much similar to what we know as the cost approach under IFRS. We also looked the equation of exchange, which is pretty much a cash flow methodology that we know under sort of IFRS today. If you look at IFRS 13, looking at sort of future cash flows, what can this crypto produce in terms of cash flows? I think that could be quite interesting, maybe for utility tokens, which actually have a utility and could generate cash flows. And finally, the market approach. So similar to IFRS 13, what is the market for this particular crypto? Where is it listed, et cetera? And finally, on valuation, the next slide, slide 29, as I just said just now, there's a high sort of volatility still going on with crypto. So one of the big challenges. The other aspect is there are multiple markets for cryptos, but there's always a question around, what is the principal market? What is a credible market? So that's kind of really important. If we look at the requirements in IFRS 13 that ask us to find an active market. So our research does explain that there are some challenges around identifying an active market, and sort of list some of the reasons. Some of the respondents, when we talked to people when we were developing the discussion paper, they viewed that when you have non-fiat exchanges, that could be a constraint to actually identifying an active market in accordance with IFRS 13. This is because a crypto is not always directly exchanged into fiat or into money. Often the exchanges only allow crypto to crypto sort of exchange. So that could be a challenge. And I will stop here and I will pass you back to my colleague, Vincent. Thank you.
Okay. We had some questions which we posed, Isabel. Do you want to read them?
So, Vincent, what are we waiting for at this moment?
Well, we had some questions, so we asked whether... Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, so do you agree that this need to address the accounting topics not in scope of the IFRIC agenda decision? Then which of the three options put forward in the discussion paper would be the most appropriate solution to address IFRS requirements, and whether there are other possible approaches? And the last question is, if a new standard were to be developed, should its scope be only on crypto assets and liabilities, or should it be broader and encompass digital assets and liabilities? You know, taking account that crypto assets are really the first generation of blockchain and there's been an extended use. So there may be an extension of similar issues on the accounting front to broader users of blockchain. So those are the three questions we've posed to get your input on.
Okay, I'm not sure if Hans is frozen again. So, Mary? Mary?
I think we have Mark back. Mark?
Yeah, I'm waiting for Mary to come in. Mary, are you there? Just before we start, just on our side, I agree with you, of course, that there's nothing in IFRS. If you searched for, is that Mary? No. If you search for crypto assets, you're not going to find any specific requirements in IFRS on those. But definitely in the case of ICOs, so on the issuer side, I think actually, in most cases, unless there's no obligation, in most cases you would be within the scope of a standard. So there's not a choice. It's rather you have to apply IFRS 15 or IFRS 9, or you know, consistent with the firms page that you had in the analysis. And on the asset side, I think you know we do have requirements that apply, and you know we dealt with some in the agenda decision, but IAS 2 and IAS 38. So I think in a lot of cases, it's more a question of whether people think the outcomes are appropriate as opposed to we don't have anything. And so I think that's just, for me, a slightly different starting point to saying that we don't have requirements as such in many cases. People, of course, might think we should have different requirements, but I think usually or often you are in the scope of an IFRS standard, even though the word crypto isn't there. Mm. I think I'm giving up on Mary. Can't get hold of her. So, Mark, I think you're next.
Thank you. Really interesting paper. I suppose, you know, sort of thinking about the options that are set out in it, I think the one that's clearest for me is that option 3 I don't support. And the reason for that is that I think that this is still a developing area. It's still one where regulation, governance, maturity is still developing, and therefore I don't really see, and based on our stakeholder engagement, I don't think that there's any sort of urgent need for, you know, adding the need for a standard to the board's agenda. So I think that's the sort of clearest one from me. However, there are issues that are sort of worthy of further discussion, and I think that also reflects the fact that as the use of crypto assets expands, there will be a need to think about whether or not the existing standards have sufficient to reflect those needs. I'm thinking in particular the needs of, for instance, investors who might want to see better disclosure around crypto assets, and in particular some of the risks that sit around them, and that currently perhaps is not supported by the current process. Some of our stakeholders are quite nervous about if the board moves quickly to engage in the crypto debate, will the board be seen to be legitimizing their use? And that was a concern from a reasonably large group of the people that we spoke to. And I think the other thing that I sort of wonder about is that we know that central bank digital currencies are perhaps not that far away, and when that happens, I think that probably will see the need for consideration of what can be done to the existing framework and standards to better reflect this. So I'm not sitting on option one. I'm sort of moving towards option two, but I think that there's some flexibility over the timing in respect of any work that might be done, as I think that the need is a growing one, and it's likely to become more evident, but maybe not quite there yet. Thank you.
I think Patrick was next, Hans.
Thank you, Sue. First of all, I remember that we had the opportunity. I had the opportunity to explain what has been done in my jurisdiction. In the presentation, it's mentioned as guidance. No, it's regulation. So it's applicable. We have, in addition, created. We had addressed the question of the issuer and also of holders, and we have completed with a standard on platforms. That being said, it's true that it's a developing market, don't have many cases, but the interest of having a regulation, if I may mention, is that it created transparency. So the study, the presentation made by EFRAG is very interesting. It confirms, in my view, the various issues that need to be addressed. I think that for the ISB to stay away from a topic like that is a bit, is not forward-looking in my view, because we don't really know how it will develop. You see significant potential developments. They are not happening as fast as we thought. There are also, you know, strange practices that need to be, if possible, put into or stopped or put into a framework of transparency. So I think it is key for the ISB, together with the other stakeholders or standard setters that are operating into that space to move. Now, I'm a little more positive than Mark in terms of options. I would start with option two, and then we would see. Because I concur with Sue that I think that in a number of cases, if we are able to qualify the nature of the crypto asset, then we might have, in many cases, an answer. Now, is that answer straightforward and very clear? Not always. Therefore, clarifying the link between the potential crypto situations and the related standards would be a good starting point, because that would help a lot, in my view. Thank you very much.
Before I give the floor to Yu Chen, perhaps I can ask Mary to speak, who has found another way of reaching us.
I think I have. Is this working? Yeah. Okay, good. A number of comments, and I think I will echo, you know, some, but maybe not all of the thoughts that Patrick just expressed, and also some of Mark's. I think it's very, very helpful from my perspective to have this consultation at this time, because I think helping people to get their minds around the different issues before they comment in response to our forthcoming agenda consultation is a very, 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 very helpful groundwork, because I think you've done a lot to lay out different approaches and thoughts and understand what the scale of that may be. And so want to say thank you for that. But I think it's also going to be important, and this is where I'm echoing some of what Patrick just said, that we get stakeholders, and I think the agenda consultation naturally does this, to say, okay, if this is what the shape and scale of a potential project are, how does that line up against other priorities that you may have for the board and thinking about issues? And this comes back to that point, and I think Mark mentioned it also, about whether we have standard setting getting ahead of market developments, or whether we should wait to see how things settle out a bit more. I can understand and at times agree with some views that the applicable accounting outlined in the agenda decision may not be what people see as optimal, but I think then it's a question of priorities in terms of improving the accounting for cryptos versus some of the other things that people may want us to do, which is why I hark back to the agenda consultation. Just a couple more thoughts. One, to kind of close out this agenda consultation link, I think it would be very helpful, and I'm going to say this particularly to Vincent and Isabel, but to all of us, when we're talking about these issues, to kind of distinguish between approaches that could be taken if standard setting were done versus questions about the application of today's standards. And going back to Sue's initial comments, I think, you know, we may be pushing people to IS8 and just an assumption that they're outside the scope of standards when they're not, particularly from the issuer perspective. And I guess I'll just shift to the issuer perspective last to say that I'm a lot more skeptical about our ability to do something productive at the issuer level, because anything I think of really comes in. I mean, I think there's some helpful work that can be done on application guidance and how you think through the applicable standards, but some of the ideas raised really seem to be kind of requests for relief. If you say, well, account for the predominant characteristic, that is implying don't account for some other rights and obligations that are present. And I think as long as the message is that this is evolving rapidly and we have unique packages of complex sets of rights and obligations, I question how much we could do from a standard setting perspective. So that's something I wanted to bring out. Okay, Hans, maybe I was frustrated by technology and not being able to speak, so I spoke for a long time, so I'll shut up now. But those are some thoughts and reactions to the paper, which, as I said, I think is a very helpful contribution.
Well, those were perfectly sensible words that you said, Mary, so thank you very much. Yu Chen.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Hans. Actually, first of all, we think this topic is a very important one. Let me share our comments on the three questions on page 31. On the first question, the Chinese stakeholder generally believe it's necessary to have the discussion on other accounting issues regarding cryptocurrency. They have the two reasons. The first reason is that cryptocurrency is one of the most virtual currency, which is different from legal currency or other traditional currency. Currently, there are more than 800 kinds of cryptocurrency in the markets. The technology development and the market changes may facilitate cryptocurrency to enhance their worldwide influence. However, cryptocurrency are significantly different from traditional assets, and there is no specific recognition or management, no recognition or measurement guidelines for crypto assets, crypto liabilities under the IFRS. So the stakeholder in China think it's necessary to conduct the research on the accounting treatment of cryptocurrency. The second reason, the Interpretation Committee agenda decision only clarify the nature of cryptocurrency, the applicable standards and the disclosure requirements. They think it's not enough. It's necessary to clarify or make the accounting treatment clear. For example, the accounting treatment and the disclosure requirement for the holder and the issuer of crypto assets and other reporting entity. That's our comments on question one. On question two, regarding the three options on slide page 10, the Chinese stakeholder prefer the third option at present. They have some three reasons. First one, there is no accounting treatment requirement for the holder and issuer of cryptocurrency. Second, the current IFRS provide limited guidelines for cryptocurrency. The existing standards mentioned in the agenda paper may not be fully applicable to cryptocurrency. Let's take the economic substance into account. First, the value drivers of cryptocurrency are quite different from that of traditional assets. Second, the payment scope of cryptocurrency goes beyond the traditional regulations, and there may be contracts among multiple entities, or there may be no specific contract terms. All these characteristics are different from financial instrument. Three, the cryptocurrency should not be deemed as cash or cash equivalent for not being legal money and lacking the government endorsement. Four, simply revising or clarifying the existing IFRS cannot accurately reflect the substance of cryptocurrency, and it also may be misleading. That's the second reason. The third reason, cryptocurrency are expected to have new development and changes in the future. For example, there will be new additional categories, functions, or trading methods. Therefore, it's important to set a separate standard for cryptocurrency, which will facilitate the subsequent standards revision and will not have significant impact on other existing standards. What's more, the new standards will be more targeted and easier for people to learn and to comply with. And to be honest, currently the stakeholder prefer the third option, but it should be noted that that's just our preliminary views. With the development of cryptocurrency and the deepening of research, whether a new standard is the best solution needs more consideration in the future. That's our comments on question two. On question three, the Chinese stakeholder think that if the economic substance and the transaction mode of crypto assets and crypto liability formed with other blockchain technologies are similar with those of cryptocurrency or liability, then they can also be added to the scope of the new standards. The reason is this kind of assets have a decentralization characteristic, which means they don't have official or third-party endorsement and are mainly controlled by the market. The existing standards do not provide a definition or accounting treatment for these standards. They also provide two suggestions. First one suggests focusing on establishing a cryptocurrency accounting standards framework to clarify the scope, the classification of digital assets for accounting purpose. The second suggestion is formulating the accounting principles more scientifically so that minimize the changes to the standards to make it easy to apply and enhance the credibility of the standards. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Yuchen. I give the floor to Jim.
Thanks, Hans. Maybe comments very similar to the comments of Sue, and we've had a lot of interest under US GAAP on the intersection of accounting and digital or crypto assets. And what we've at least found today is certainly one, the paper is very helpful in reminding us and highlighting that it's a very dynamic area. Fortunately, we've found that our standards are very dynamic as well. That is, they don't focus on the means in which rights and obligations are registered or conveyed, whether by paper, or at least in general, don't focus on the means, whether that's by paper, whether that's by digital conveyance or otherwise. And so when we've taken a step back, at least under our standards, I suspect very similarly under IFRS, and said that the accounting should really be governed by the rights and obligations, I don't think we've found any holes in US GAAP yet on the issuer side. We have accounting guidance for contingencies. We have accounting guidance for derivatives, for debt, for financial instruments, for equity, and for performance obligations. And those are all agnostic as to the form of conveyance, or at least generally agnostic as to the form of conveyance. And so we haven't seen any necessarily shortcoming on the issuer side, although evaluation can be challenging as to the types of obligations that have been conveyed. And certainly we stand ready if there are questions about that accounting, but we haven't focused on, again, whether it's conveyed digitally or registered or transferred digitally or any other way. And I think on the holder side, that is where there's been at least more interest in the U.S., and I don't think it's because of lack of standards. We have guidance on accounting for securities. We have a guidance on accounting for other rights that an entity owns, regardless of how it's conveyed. But I think some question whether or not the intangible model works best for certain types of intangibles. But I don't think those questions, at least in the U.S., are significantly different from other things that trade actively like commodities. And so we've
not that we're not interested in this area, we continue to pay significant attention, but the question has really been whether we should change standards on the accounting or, as opposed to that there's a hole in existing standards. Certainly, we also pay attention as to whether or not central central governments or agencies begin using crypto as forms of monetary transactions for those purposes. We would certainly look at whether those meet the definition of cash today. Again, if you focus on the rights and obligation as opposed to the means of conveyance, we think that likely there would be gap that is suitable for that purpose as well. So, and then maybe just finally on valuation, I think paper does an excellent job of raising valuation questions. One that comes up here as well is not just the act, you know, whether the active or the market is active, but the degree to which there is market regulation that allows for transparency in terms of who is transacting in the market. Are those transactions based upon predominantly transactions between insiders? And then the degree to which those markets are free of manipulation also seem to be important questions for purposes of valuation.
Okay. Friedrich.
Thank you very much, Hans. Hopefully you can hear me okay. Based on the outreach we have done with the OSG members, those that have responded agreed that there is need to do to address this topic. And some of the members actually supported option three due to the reasons already outlined to have a clear guidance that doesn't interfere with other standards. However, stakeholders in one jurisdiction did question whether the scope on the asset side should go broader beyond digital assets into an intangible assets, for example, held for investment purposes. And on the flip side, commented or questions whether there is a need for a specific standard on the holder side, again, due to the reasons already discussed and the available standards already existing. I think that is from me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Friedrich. Nobu.
Yes, thank you. As Isabel mentioned, the ASBJ does have a project on its agenda to develop guidance for ICOs under Japanese GAAP. Unfortunately, that hasn't developed as quickly as we would like. And we are observing that the volume of transactions are not increasing as we had expected. So we are observing how the market is working today to and see how we can develop progress the project. In terms of the questions in the paper, we think or we do not think that the ISB or the ISC, when it developed IS-38, had envisioned that the digital world was coming. And therefore, we do think that it may be time for an overhaul of IS-38. But at the same time, we believe that would be a long-term initiative, and we do need to make sure that constituents are comfortable with the change. And therefore, we think it's likely to be a research project, and that we would like the ISB to start working on the research so that it won't need to start working when it becomes really urgent to develop a standard. At the same time, there are some issues that might need to be resolved short term. For example, the issue about the definition of cash and cash equivalents. We do see the central banks potentially issuing these cryptocurrencies, and if they don't, well, the agenda decision clearly says that it's not cash today. So that assessment might be reassessed in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you, Nobu. EH?
Thank you, Hans. Well, first of all, study of IFRAC was very impressive, and we learned a lot from that paper. And if we come to the questions from you, I think that developing a very comprehensive a new standard covering holders accounting and issuers accounting will be very difficult because, as Mary said, there are the many aspects of those ICOs are could be covered by existing standards, and at the same time, we believe the. This is market ICO and crypto assets. We are in the early stage of the development, and probably the market, including ICO market, will be ever changing. The future will be very different in the future. So it's very difficult to forecast what's going to happen in the future and put all different provisions in this proposed new standard. At the same time, we have the view that even the regulators in different jurisdictions are having difficulty in taking their like a clear position. They don't know how to set up the laws and regulations. So we have to see and watch what's going to happen with respect to the legislation of the different government, you know, divisions and regulators. And in terms of three options, we, KSB, is very clear. We strongly support option two, which is a small change, because one of the challenges that the definition of intangible, that creates a lot of difficulties and problems for preparers, because the information provided on the current standard, which I mean IS-38, is, I believe, very misleading, and it's not very useful for readers. So I think we better have, at the minimum, small changes on current definition of intangible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, EH. I don't see any other people raising their hands. We're also a little bit over time. Shall we break for 10 minutes till approximately 1:05 and then resume our discussions? Is that agreed?
Vincent Louis will take over from here.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
Let's resume at 1:05.